Rocky, the empty pillow chair. Representative Costello, welcome back. Myself, Stoltz. Representative Osterman is ill today. Representative Wilson. Representative Edgman, Representative Thompson, and Vice Chair Newman. We have three bills on the docket today. Previously heard from yesterday, House Bill 30. I never did get an amendment, I don't believe, from... did we get one? Okay. Okay. The House Bill 30, continued from the previous agenda. House Bill 22, board sunset extension of the Board of Marine Pilots. House Bill 26, sunset extension of the Board of Public Accountancy. Those are the three items, and with luck, we'll have all three of them departed from the committee today. But who never know what happens. Speaker Chenault, we had we're continuing on. We were nearly done with this measure. We had a pending amendment. Does somebody want to offer this amendment on behalf of Representative Guerra? Anybody? Anybody from Fairbanks, maybe? I will offer this amendment by request in absentia from Representative Guerra. I will not be the most forceful advocate of it. So, amendment number one. Will the clerk note that the co-chair is offering this amendment in Representative Guerra's absence?
Object.
I will move the amendment. And I noted an objection, a premature objection.
I miss it, Mr. Co-chair.
Okay. With that, does anybody want to speak to this amendment and the underlying philosophies?
No, Mr. Chairman, but since you introduced the amendment, can you tell me what the amendment does?
Yeah, basically it's basically it does very little substantively, and it might be called superficial. It I'm not sure. No, I'm just I'm not really stalling for time. I figured if I said some things pejorative, I might have somebody running in the building here. I think what it does is it is, in my opinion, and subjective that it is, it recognizes that cutting budgets is tough, and 10%, and by gosh, if I were to put an amendment on here, if maybe find a director or a commissioner that might know, be willing to make the cut rather than the other language, but I think it's language in an amendment that's trying to protect the process of growth of state government. You should always talk about your own amendments. Okay.
Very hard time leaving a senator's office.
I was doing my best. Representative Guerra, would you like to, your amendment's been moved and objected to. Would you like to take over? I wasn't doing the best of the job.
Oh. That kills me.
I was trying.
Thanks.
I was losing them, though.
All right, let me get my breath back.
We'll just take a brief at ease. The amendment number one offered by Guerra, moved by Stoltz.
Thank you.
Objected to by Wilson.
If you go to page 5 of the bill, please. So, this amendment is intended to give the public who reads the document that we're going to get, the other legislators who aren't sitting on finance who get the document that they're not going to be in hearings on, the information, a little more information, so they can understand the proposed 10% budget cuts that are required by the bill. The cuts aren't required, but the suggestions are. So without this amendment, people are going to get a document, and I mean, I really do consider this a friendly amendment. People are going to get a document that lists a series of cuts totaling 10% of the agency's budget. The bill is smartly worded in that it says, identify cuts that don't serve a current need or aren't essential to the agency's mission. And then if you can't find cuts that meet those standards, then try and find some other cuts that are the lowest priority services you can find in the agency. So you've got meet the three standards, don't serve a current need, aren't constitutional, don't meet the agency's mission. And then if you can't find those, then you find cuts somewhere else. All this amendment says is that when our consultants do this for us, for all 60 legislators in the building, for all 600,000 people in the public, whoever's interested in this stuff, it says the report should say which of these standards the cut meets so that they know this is one that they've determined doesn't meet a current need. This is one that didn't satisfy any of those three criteria, but we proposed it anyway because it was the next level of non-priority services, so that people know where the consultants are coming from. Now, I've heard the opposition. One of the opposition arguments is they're going to do this anyway. Well, they may not. We want them to do it, and the amendment makes them do it. It's just a piece of information that goes to the public so they can see why this cut is being recommended. It's full information for the public. It's better information for the public. And frankly, if the agency doesn't know why they made the cut, this sort of forces them to say why they did. Because these are the cuts that we want from the agencies for them to try to identify. So it's a full information sort of daylight provision for the public who don't get to sit into these finance committee meetings, for the other legislators. And the argument that the agencies might do this anyway just never really works for me. That's why you put that in a statute. So that's why I proposed the amendment.
Representative Wilson, then Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And we did have this in our subcommittee. And one of the things that, you know, I was concerned is that it may not always fit into one of these categories as well. It may be in several different areas. And I think the whole point of the exercise is just to be able to identify them based on those needs, but to go into what I would say is going more into the weeds of figuring out why we did or didn't do this or do that could actually make it more confusing and not less confusing. And so, you know, I voted against it. At that point, I'm still am against this amendment, but thank you.
Representative Costello.
Thank you. Again, we did hear the amendment in the subcommittee, and what I think, the reason I'm going to be voting against the amendment is because I feel that it weakens the intention of the legislation, which is to ask some very difficult questions. I mean, no doubt about it, all of the departments and the agencies and the public and the legislature will be asking some very tough questions. My concern is that by allowing them sort of an out, we avoid the intention of the bill, which is to have that conversation. And it's my understanding through the subcommittee that there are opportunities for public testimony. This will not be a conversation that the executive branch is having with the legislative branch, but there are components in the bill that involve the public. And so I think that by the end of the process, I think the information we'll be getting will be helping us collectively move forward in a budget situation where we're not on sure footing like we used to be. And so I would, I'll be voting against the amendment, but I do appreciate the fact that you recognize that this is not going to be easy, you know, for anybody. So thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just trying to understand this better. Representative Garris mentioned how it addresses and makes sure that the public is aware of this. And when I read the amendment, it says that if an agency is not able to identify the 10% of the criteria set out in 2AC A, which is does not serve current need, or C of this section, which is are not essential to the agency mission or delivery of the agency's cores, then, or not constitutional, we can't do that anyhow, that they don't have to list them. It seems to me that's what it says. They don't have to identify the 10%. Because that's what it says. If the agency is not able to identify 10%, it could be reduced or eliminated. And when we talk about the public notice, I think that we kind of cover that on, it was a question that I had on page 2. A new amendment that was put in the subcommittee with lines 5 through 8 that talks about the result of the review in informal alleged budget and audit. And that's when the audit is released, and so the public is aware of that at that time because of that part of the bill. And so I'm trying to understand what the goal is here, because the public already knows what's going on there. Representative Guerra.
Representative Guerra.
Sure. Maybe I've not done a very good job explaining the amendment. It's not intended to do what our Representative Newman is worried about. You have to identify the 10% of cuts. We're not trying to weaken that part. That's the goal of the bill, for our consultants to find cuts that we can look at so we can decide what to do with an agency budget. So what it says, what it means to say, and I know these numbers in the amendment look confusing, but the way the bill is written, you first look for the things that satisfy A through C, doesn't serve a current need, constitutional, not essential to the agency's mission. If you can't find cuts that reach 10%, under the bill as written, if you can't find cuts in those three categories that meet 10% of the agency's budget, then you go up a couple lines to lines 9 and 10, and then you just find other cuts that are the highest priority cuts, even if they don't meet A through C. So that's what the bill says, that you get to 10%, you try and first find the ones that fit A through C, and if you can't find ones that fit A through C, then you find other cuts that you think are as unharmful as possible. So the amendment says you still make those find recommendations for that same 10% of cuts. Same 10%. All the amendment says is you identify for the public, are these cuts ones that fit A through C? And if not, are they ones that fit lines 9 and 10, which is other cuts because we couldn't find them in A through C? And that way the public knows this is something we're recommending you take out because it doesn't meet a public need. This is something we're taking out because, well, we looked through those first three criteria. We couldn't find cuts that met that public need. The bill allows that anyway. But these are the next level of priority cuts that we found, even though we couldn't meet criteria A through C. So the public can then look at the document and go, that's where that cut came from. Same 10%, but now I understand what at least the auditors were thinking when they identified it. And then people could ask questions from there. So it gives them more information. What was the purpose for the proposed cut? That's all I'm trying to do. But the same 10% requirement that's in the bill remains in the bill. It's just sort of a label next to the cut that says this one doesn't meet a current need and isn't constitutional. This one, unfortunately, we couldn't find anything that met A through C, but it's the next level of priority cuts we could find. Please consider this one. So it doesn't change the 10% rule at all. It just gives the public information as to why the cut was being proposed.
Thank you. I have Representative Thompson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just reading on down to number 4, and it gives you other reasons. It says, including the agency's missions, results-based measures, on line 20 and 21, prioritization of core services and all programs within the core services from the most important to the least important. And I would think that that would show where that those cuts might possibly come from, the least important core services that they have.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. One of the things I almost view this as an out, Mr. Speaker, said if the agency is not able to find the 10%, that doesn't say find the 10%. And I think this we are an appropriating body. We are not having them tell us what we have to do. This is a recommendation action, as I understand the purpose of your bill. It's an audit committee will not take over the appropriation powers. That would take a constitutional amendment. And I don't see any purposely, I don't see anything wrong with them recommending the 10% cuts, and they're certainly capable of making a narrative that these are not efficacious cuts in their opinion, and that's still within the realm of possibility. But I'm very uncomfortable, Mr. Speaker, with the giving the agencies an out. Okay, if you can't do this, don't have to do it, but you have to tell us why you can't do it. And it's not even that strong, in my opinion. But your comments, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, Representative Chenault, District 28. We've looked at this, and I just wanted to make one clarifying note that it's not the review committee that makes these recommendations in regards to the department. It's the department that makes these recommendations to the review committee. And Mr. Chairman, I think the bill is crafted how it needs to be put together. I think we add things in there that I don't believe that it gives the department an out, because we are requesting them to provide that 10%.
Our bill or the amendment?
This bill, not the amendment. I think it's already in there. I think what you will see if the department does not have a position that they can cut that 10%, and they have to go deeper into their budget to find that 10%. I think you stated it, that you're going to see narratives from them on why that particular next item to get them to that 10% is important to that budget. I think that's what Representative Guerra is looking for, and I believe that the department is simply going to do that. I've yet to see a department where you've asked for some kind of a decrement in their budget and not receive a list or a commentary on what all effect that will have on the current budget. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to support the amendment. I understand Representative Guerra's concerns, but I think that the departments will give those narratives when you get into that position.
Well, there's one thing I wish I could figure out how to craft it. When Representative Hawker and I were freshmen, I remember visiting his office, and he had a sign on the wall: if it's in the yellow pages, why is government doing it? I wish I could figure out a way to put that in there. That'd be a question to ask. But that Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I originally read the amendment sort of similarly to Representative Costello and other members here. But now I guess I've been turned around on the idea. The way I think it would work best, I mean, it does, it still, you continue the 10% general fund cuts for the agency. It's got A, B, and C. And I think really what happens is after A, B, and C are not, after they're not able to satisfy the 10% general fund with A, B, and C, then you suddenly have a position where they can where they'd have to justify the remaining cuts, which are going to be important for this review team and possibly for the legislature to consider about whether it's a, whether it's where we want to go. And so I think the justification that they're going to have, the extra notes at the end of the review team response, I think is going to be valuable to us. So I'll be supporting the amendment.
Representative Gary, you've got Representative Kawasaki now. Do you want to risk losing him? No, go ahead.
No, please,
go ahead. I'm just being a little light.
Mr. Chair, there are different levels of frustration we feel in this building, and one is when you can't explain something, and I haven't been able to explain this very well. Your concern is completely valid. If we were giving them an out to not find 10% of cuts, then we'd be undermining the bill. That's not what the amendment does. The amendment leaves the bill alone. It just has to do with what commentary you see in the report that you get. So I know the way LegLegal has written this, it looks, if you just read the first sentence, that if you can't find 10%, then you just say, I can't find 10%. But that's not what the amendment says. What the amendment says is if you can't find the 10% in those criteria in A through C, then you do exactly what the bill says, which is then you go to small C2, which is lines 9 and 10, and you say the rest of the cuts come from small C2. So the consultants we hire are going to be doing the same exact job under this amendment as the bill, which is they're going to find 10% of cuts. But they're just going to tell you whether they meet first, whether they meet A through C, as the bill says. And as the bill says, if they can't find ones that meet A through C, then they have to keep going down the list till they get to 10%, but they'll identify the remainder as ones that are not A through C cuts. They're cuts that are on the next level, the lowest priority services in the agency. So it's not an out from the 10% recommendation that we get. It just identifies where they got the 10% from, which is so it does not change at all the proposals that are going to be made by the consultants. It just lets the public know which criteria in the bill are met by the 10% of cuts. So no out whatsoever, just information to the public. I know it's written in a funny way, but that's what the amendment does.
And Mr. Chairman, once again, I won't go through what the amendment does, but just for clarification, the review team does not provide the 10% cuts. It's the agency that's in charge of that. Those programs is the one that brings forth those cuts or those adjustments to the review team for review and then to bring to the legislature for action on.
I apologize for misstating that, so you had to amplify it so many times because things do need to be reclarified and so understood. And I knew it. One of those things, I knew what you meant. I said it wrong. Any closing? Is objection maintained, Representative Wilson?
Yes.
The clerk call the roll.
Representative Costello?
No.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Guerra?
Yes.
Representative Holmes?
No.
Representative Munoz?
No.
Representative Newman?
No.
Representative Thompson?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
No.
Clerk announce the roll.
8 nay, 2 yay.
So by the vote of 2 yay, 8 nay, the amendment fails. Are there any other amendments before us? Representative Costello, we talked about the fiscal notes yesterday, but invite you back to.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we have three fiscal notes for House Bill 30. The first is from the Office of the Governor, Office of Management and Budget, OMB component number 2144, and they report no fiscal impact, House Bill 30. The second fiscal note for House Bill 30 is from the legislature, the Budget and Audit Committee, Legislative Audit. It's OMB component number 773. For fiscal year 2014, they report 642,303 positions. In FY14, no fiscal impact. In FY15, 1,351,903 positions. In FY16, 1,198,903 positions. In fiscal year 17, they report 1,324,903 positions. And in fiscal year 18 and 19, for each of those years, three positions with an impact of 1,177,900.
We're not going to figure in the 10% yet, right?
The final fiscal note is the legislature's Budget and Audit Committee, Legislative Finance Allocation. That's OMB component number 774, and there is no fiscal impact.
We had Ms. Curtis address these fiscal notes yesterday, unless there are any follow-up questions. They discussed the issue of the potential contracting and in-house, and I think that's all an open question on what the most that'll be an evolving process. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move committee substitute for House Bill number 30, Finance, version 28LSO180/Y, dated 2/11/13, amended with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
It was not amended.
Not amended. That's right. Almost. It was a CS.
Are there any objections? Hearing none. the bill's moved from committee. Thank you and your staff, and thanks again to the subcommittee members for their work on this. And I imagine we could be seeing this sometime soon, again, elsewhere.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, committee members.
That will take a brief at ease. We have before us Representative Hawker presenting House Bill 26.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For your record keeping, I am Representative Mike Hawker, District 27, South Anchorage. I am here requesting that you move House Bill number 26 to the floor for a House vote. House Bill 26 extends the termination date for the Board of Public Accountancy. The request in the bill is that the Board of Public Accountancy be extended to June 30, 2021. This is one of our regular recurring ministerial activities of the legislature, where we sunset boards and commissions and then review them through the legislative budget and audit process to make sure of their continuing service and necessity to the state. The bill before us is supported by the results of the legislative audit work that was done this past summer. The legislative auditor did determine that the board's termination date should be extended. It is operating in the public's interest. It has exercised appropriate regulatory oversight of public accountants, and it has recommended an extension to June 30, 2021. I would note there is one concern expressed in the legislative audit. However, that concern has nothing to do with the Board of Public Accountancy itself. That concern has to do with the overall operations of the Professional Licensing Division, of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing, and it has to do with their administration of the case management system that applies to this agency. The fiscal note for this bill is a continuing fiscal note. It is at the same level that the Board of Public Accountancy is operating currently. I would note that the fund source for this board is the coded 1156, which is the infamous receipt supported services code, which means these are not general funds. These are funds that are taken from the regulated community that they themselves put up and allow the state to administrate for the purposes of further administrating their professional licensing board. With that, Mr. Chairman, that's about all there is to this bill, and I would certainly appreciate its consideration. We do have Mr. Habiger here with the Department of Commerce. We have Chris Curtis, the state's legislative auditor, if you have any questions, and I believe we may have a member of the Board of Public Accountancy available on teleconference if you wish to pursue that question.
What's your desire? Would you wish to stay at the table when Mr. Haberger comes up? It's your call, whatever you're comfortable with.
I'll find myself a corner here,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. I'd like to have Mr. Haberger come up. And I've had some members of the public discuss the occupational licensing.
Licensing. It's much easier to deal with, sir.
Mr. Haberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Don Haberger, and I'm Division Director of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
Well, do you want to volunteer anything, or do you want to go through the Inquisition? I think you know the issue that's been contentious or of discussion, I guess. Would you care to bring up any of your perspective on it, or do you want to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. I'll respond particularly.
Why don't you go ahead and you describe things as you understand the concerns are. I don't think I'll let you off like that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
That was obligatory. I don't think you really want.
Okay. To address the one audit issue, we did, when I got there a couple of years ago, they did install a new database into investigations. The database did have some issues in the conversion, in the installation and conversion process that was caught by a 2011 special audit, as I recall. Might have been the Med Board, can't quite recall which audit. There were a couple of things that the division did after the recommendation to address the issue. We generated a task force one, which was a specialist in databases, as well as our own team, investigators, IT, for example. They came out with a number of recommendations to fix the issues. We came back to the legislature for a special appropriation because it did incur some cost. You appropriated us that amount of money. Right now we're in phase two, which is really implementing the fixes. Right now we intend to complete those fixes in draft form, if you will. In other words, all the software writing is going to be done potentially by April 1. And then we'll have several 60 days or so of testing to make sure the system works. And then the complete fixes we anticipate to be done by the end of June.
Any questions on this subject matter? Representative? No. Okay. Mr. Haberger, it's generally these, with the exception of a few of the boards like Board of Fish, Board of Game, these are all self-supporting, self-assessed, and the duly confirmed appointed and legislatively confirmed members set policies. I've heard some discussion from folks from a couple of jurisdictions in the state that the professional wishes on how to use those funds have been sidetracked by members of that of the bureaucracy, and that I'm not a member of this board. Maybe you can fill me in on what your understanding is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have heard from our boards that they would like increased ability to travel, particularly for out-of-state meetings. Most of our boards, and real quickly, we have about 40 professional licensing rounded programs in Title VIII. 20 of them have boards. 20 of them are have oversight by the department. And our boards do generally belong to national associations, professional associations that, if you will, steer the profession in the various states. They like to be involved in these discussions. They set policies that have national impacts and also state impacts. As they set these policies, they certainly want to be engaged. They feel they have a voice there. They should have a voice there. However, when FY13 came out, we had about 400,000 rounded in travel authority. I know in FY13 the governor's budget had about 550 authority requests, and so in the process of trying to determine how to allocate those resources, I did come up with a system. The system essentially is all in-state meetings. They're statutory, must do those. I did carve out a little bit for administrative purposes, my traveling to Anchorage, for example, to steer staff, if you will. And then out-of-state travel is parceled out of remaining resources.
Representative Costello, within Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Haberger. I know we're going to be going into this further in the budget subcommittee, but since you're here, I did want to ask whether or not there's a plan for transparency in that licensees can just go online and click on a link and see where their fees are going, and that type of transparency. And I'm asking at the request of a constituent who asked me that question. I think it's a really good idea, and I just wanted to give you an opportunity to respond.
Through the chair, Representative Costello, one of the other issues that we had to deal with was, if you will, bringing our accounts up to speed. We went through a 10-year review of all the board's revenue expense reports. We reconciled all that to the state accounting system. We did that. We completed that. Part of the process in doing that is predictable quarterly reports that are reconciled to the accounting system, and those reports are given to the board quarterly. Getting them additionally online is a good suggestion, and we will certainly consider that.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you. Don, I just have a question on this. Well, for example, this Board of Accountancy, you provided my office with a reconciliation of how much excess funds that is being carried forward by the Board of Accountancy, and it shows $147,000 is accumulated in their account. They are requesting to send two CPAs to the national conference, and they're denied because it didn't fit in the budget, but yet they've got $147,000 sitting there. That's their money. So I'm confused as to how to straighten out this problem. Should there be two line items in the budget? Should there be a line item that is for department travel and a line item that says prepaid professional board travel, possibly, so that it doesn't get the confusion going that we're saving general funds when we cut the travel budget for the department? That's what my concern is. And then the second part of this question would be that I've got not only this board but a couple of other boards that have sent inquiries to me that they have a national meeting and they have a scholarship from the national board. They have to travel with the state's transportation. It is taken out of their funds that they have collected for travel. And then the national board refunds it to the state. It doesn't go back into their travel budget. It goes into the general fund. And this is a concern that I see that we're getting some very unhappy professional boards out there. And how do we handle that?
Mr. Habiger, and then follow up by Representative Hawker.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, yes, I've heard the board's concern on a number of those issues. I have talked to probably all 20 of them at one point in time about this. My understanding, and again, I'll put that in the context of I'm relatively new to the state system, but those that have been here a while and understand the process better than I assure me that I can't overspend the allocation that the legislature gives me. So in trying to run the program on that amount of money, I feel that I have about, as I said earlier, $400,000 to spend on travel. Came up with a priority system. So I feel that I cannot overspend, even if we collect additional resources. For example, licensing or professionals pay on a biennial basis. We are generally collecting 2 years of revenue in advance of 2 years of expenses. So at any one time, you could see a program has a substantial surplus. We will manage that, and if expenses come in less than revenue, then they may have a carryover. We do not touch that carryover, of course, and when we do our analysis, that carryover may be used to reduce fees. Or if we know that there are going to be additional expenses in the next biennium, perhaps a court case that is coming at us, it may be used to pay for those additional expenses that we may anticipate. Insofar as travel is concerned, that third-party reimbursement is perhaps, the way I know how to quantify that. State policy requires, and this is set by the Department of Administration, requires me to expend on the board's behalf and show those expenses on, if you will, their revenue and expense reports. As I do that, and I understand it's a transparency issue, and so the public has a right to know, and I believe that's correct, all the expenses that are being incurred, and therefore travel, out-of-state travel, We will pay for that up front. If a third party does reimburse, like a national association, then that is collected, but it is deposited in the general fund.
Follow up?
Governor Tim Thompson.
Thank you. And then I guess what's amazing to me is that their travel's denied. It's their money that they collected for travel and is put into this account, so that money is not used this year. And next year they have their 2 years' worth of dues, and it's piled up, and it keeps growing. And then your recommendation to them is that they reduce their dues because they got too much money. Well, the money is there for a travel purpose, and they don't even get to use it. So I see some real confusion coming out of this and not getting any better unless we can figure out how to separate prepaid professional travel fees from general fund expenditures for the department. That's all I have. I think Representative Hawker might have an explanation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In a meeting, and for the members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, in a meeting that was conducted in my office a short while ago, some week ago, whatever, with Representative Thompson, myself, and folks from the Corporations Board, based on their representation, without having done any more detailed research on my behalf, but I will accept their representation, their claim was that they have been granted insufficient spending authority for the receipt-supported services dollars collected in aggregate for all the boards and commissions in the state of Alaska. That has resulted in the need for the agency to ration the amount of receipt-supported services money that is collected from each of those boards, and not allow any board or commission that is paying its own way through receipt-supported services to access all of the money that it is being assessed and taken by the state of Alaska. That is point one. And I to that point, with all respect, my friends, my colleagues, this is confiscation and impoundment of money that truly is not the state's money. This is not general fund money. This is money that is paid by self-supporting organizations into the state's custody with the reasonable expectation that it's available for them to operate their boards and commissions. Now, through whatever mechanism, if the agency does not have the authority to spend that money, I would have to concur. We, the state, have made a policy that says we're going to impound your money and not allow you access to it. That is respectfully tantamount to theft, and that's something that Representative Thompson and I wanted to get together with other members of this committee, and I've been for reasons beyond anyone's control, been unable to get together with the appropriate subcommittee folks, but it's on our agenda to address that issue, because again, this is not general fund money. This is receipt-supported services money. This is money taken from Alaska's citizens in a custodial relationship with the promise back to them that they have the ability to access it to manage their activities. I do have a recommendation to resolve point two, and that is where, you know, many of these organizations, people travel and they get out, you know, you go to a professional organization, that professional organization has the ability, wherewithal, and policy of then reimbursing the state of Alaska for the travel expenses incurred in professionals attending those meetings. That is a fairly simple matter to deal with in the language section of the operating budget, where we make an appropriation that is not just for the receipt-supported services, the 1159 funds, but all you do is put into that language section that the appropriation includes the monetary appropriation we made and any of these recoveries that may in fact come back to the state as the operation of policies, procedures of those larger national organizations. It's respectfully a very simple fix. It's none of my business to tell you how to do things, but I would certainly ask that you consider, first off, as you evaluate the Corporations Board this year, you make certain that we authorize the spending of all the money that we are taking from Alaska's citizens, and secondly, we make certain that the state is not literally stealing travel money from these organizations, where that money is advanced and then reimbursed to the state of Alaska by sweeping it back into the general fund. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And this is an appropriate time to discuss, and I figured we'd be able to handle this later in the process. This we weren't not proposing an amendment to this bill, but this is a very convenient discussion point.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to, if I may, sir.
Yes, sir.
The conversation we're having is about an operation of the Board of Corporations and Public Licensing. This has nothing, respectfully, this has nothing to do with the bill in front of you asking to reauthorize the Board of Accountancy, which is operating just beautifully through 2021. Thank you, sir.
I thought I had said that, but your amplification was much appreciated.
Yes, thank you. It bared amplification, sir.
Representative Guerra.
Thanks. I know it's probably just a misspeak, but there's nothing that this board does that comes out of general fund money that isn't paid for by the membership, correct? I mean, this is all money that comes in from the membership, the accountants, we hold it, and then we appropriate it back. There's no additional state money that's being spent.
White tiering charge.
Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that's absolutely correct.
Okay. And just because I don't know through the chair, is one of the reasons that some of the travel money is being held back, or is there any dispute within the profession that more money should be spent on investigation or other services and less money on travel? Is that any of the reason why some of the travel money is being held back?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, no. Investigations is fully funded with fee-supported services, and it's just that travel authorization issue.
And then just finally, the only concern I have about what's the proposed extension until 2020 or 2023?
8 years.
8 years?
That's the audit recommendation.
Yeah. Just at the bottom of the one pager from the Division of Legislative Audit, when the division talks about the deficiencies that it found, the last sentence is, the noted deficiencies hamper the division's ability to provide adequate and investigative support to the board. Doesn't seem like the most serious legislative audit finding I've ever seen, but it does seem like it warrants concern. So what would be the problem of having this deficiency fixed before we grant an 8-year extension?
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I would argue very strongly that we are punishing the innocent and letting the guilty go free if we were to make that decision. Alaska Statute AS0803.020 subpara C allows the legislature to extend the termination board date of the board for up to 8 years, and in this case we're requesting the full 8 years. The problem noted in the legislative audit has nothing to do with the operation of the Board of Public Accountancy itself. It has to do with a larger, unremedied problem within the Board of Corporations and Public Licensing, or the Division of Corporations and Public Licensing. In this case, and I tell you, you folks, we all understand that we have the time and work put into these reauthorization, these sunset audits by our state legislative auditor is significant. These are very expensive, they're time consuming, and they become, and even though they're a ministerial activity, they require a lot of manpower that takes away from our agency's ability to pursue other requests, particularly special audits requested by legislators, because these audits, these sunset audits, have to go to the head of the line. Again, going for 8 years over 4 years, in this case, the Board of Public Accountancy, I think, has more than demonstrated that it merits that long, the longer sunset, the four-year sunset. I have no fear that we are going to have a bunch of accountants running renegade in this state and causing any particular problems through their professional activities. Attorneys, perhaps, but not accountants.
I don't think the public's too worried about a wild accountant's convention.
We are not going to tell you about those. But sincerely, it's a matter of recognizing where the problem lies, and the Board of Public Accountancy, quite frankly, there's no need for us to have to, in 4 years, deploy all the state resources to go back and review something that is going to simply not be a problem, where the problem identified does lie with the Board of Corporations Public Licensing. And I would just as a clarification point on an earlier point made, that special audit that was referred to earlier about the issues over at the Board of Corporations Business and Professional Licensing was released by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee on June 29, 2011. And it did involve a number of specific issues, and the agency, and I will, with great respect, acknowledge the agency has been working to resolve those issues. They've been working in good faith. They need, at this point, to be working in tandem with the legislature to resolve these particular budget issues, but they also very much need to continue working with our oversight to remedy the internal problems in the operation of that division. But their problems have nothing to do with the Board of Public Accountancy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to say over the last couple of years, though, the Professional Licensing Board is, we have not had the type of audit reports and conclusions we had for several years in a row, and a lot of frustration, vacancies. You got a little bit of, you had a few gloves on your face this time. I think you guys have done a good job of cleaning up the shop over there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I didn't want to not acknowledge that, because we had some pretty wild audit reports coming out with a high degree of frustration amongst this committee. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Havinger, through this discovery process, it is a committee process. We've heard about a few issues there that are outside of the board's provision, but when we look at the sunset date and the 8-year extension on that and our legislature's job to look at these boards as they come through and oversight, is there any issues that have tended to come up in front of the Board of Public Accountancy by its members that are repetitive in nature, where the public accountants that are certified public accountants in the state bring to the board? Is there any particular issue that seems to come up fairly often, or is it issues resolved fairly quickly through the board?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, there are issues, but it's part of the normal course of business for a professional board. For example, granting licenses. Is a candidate qualified? Has a violation occurred, and should a licensee be reprimanded? So on a quarterly basis, they handle these issues. Another one is regulation. Is the profession keeping up to date with national standards, for example, and do we need to amend regulations, as you've already given them authority to do? So yes, they are quite busy, and I would consider it more of their routine business, and I don't see anything as an anomaly before that board.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have been remiss in forgetting that we had a member from the public here, member of the professional board, Mr. Johnson. Are you still online, sir? From Fairbanks?
Yes, I am.
Please go and identify yourself, and if you wish to make any comments, you're welcome to, or just indicate your status in this hearing.
Thank you, Chair. Jeff Johnson. I'm a CPA. I'm the chair of the State Board of Accountancy based in Fairbanks, and I appreciate the discussion. I'd like to, I've only been on the board, starting my third year, but the sense I have from more senior board members is that the investigative process has been enhanced and improved greatly in the last couple of years. So we think we're headed in the right direction, and we look forward to, I think Don mentioned the improvement in the reporting system, which should be fully operational this spring, and that's kind of been the problem in the past from the board's perspective, is a timely investigation, to protect the public interest. And we feel we're headed in that right direction.
And I assume you support the bill and the extension?
Correct.
Okay. Are there any questions for Mr. Johnson while he's online? Thank you very much, and you're welcome to stay online till the end of the meeting.
Thank you.
I'll just ask in general, are there any folks from the public who wanted to comment on this online or here in present? I don't think there are, but we'll just sort of see. There were nobody signed up. Anybody? Last call. We'll go ahead and close the public testimony portion. Are there any amendments? Representative Costello, we've already discussed the fiscal note in general terms.
Mr. Chair, we have one fiscal note for House Bill 26. It's number one, dated January 30th, 2013. It's from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. It provides for receipt services in the amount of $161,700 for fiscal year 2014 through fiscal year 2019 for that amount for each year, and one full-time staff.
Any questions on the fiscal note other than the other commentary about potentially addressing some issues through the budget process, which I think you'll be a part of, Representative Costello?
Happily.
Any other questions, comments? Representative Newman, you want to do the honor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill number 26, version 28-LS0154/A from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Object for a second.
Representative Guerra.
Just for a comment, I don't think the hearing would have been complete without a gratuitous attorney barb, so I appreciate that. But with that, I withdraw the objection.
I took a little bit of account you have, too, so they're colorful personalities.
Depending on, Mr. Chairman, depending how legislation goes in this building, I will be back before you with the Bar Association reauthorization.
With the objection maintained, hearing no objections, the bill is moved out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. We'll just take a very brief at ease.
Thank you all.
Thanks, Mike.
Sorry.
It's 2:31. We have one remaining item, House Bill 22, the extension of the Board of Marine Pilots, the Alaska Marine Pilots. Ms. Latham.
All right. Good afternoon, Chairman Stoltz and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham. I'm staff to Representative Kurt Olson. And as you can see, you've got the CS for House Bill 22 before you this afternoon. Another board extension, an act extending the termination date of the Board of Marine Pilots and providing for an effective date. This legislation would extend the termination date of the Board of Marine Pilots to June 30th, 2019. In accordance with the provisions of Title 24 and Title 44 of the Alaska statutes, the Board of Marine Pilots is set to terminate on June 30th, 2013. Legislative Budget and Audit reviewed the activities of the board to determine if there was a demonstrated public need for its existence and to see if it had been operating in an efficient manner. It was the opinion of LBNA that the Board of Marine Pilots should be extended. Regulating and licensing qualified marine pilots benefits the public safety and welfare and protects the marine environment. To speak to the committee substitute, HB 22 was pre-filed with an estimated extension date of June 30th, 2018. After reviewing the audit, Rep. Olson requested a CS to align with the termination date that was suggested in the audit. So that, Mr. Chairman, is a CS for House Bill 22. I can answer questions you may have about the bill. And as you know, we have Chris Curtis here from Legislative Audit and also Don Haberger from DCCED to speak to the fiscal note.
Just as a ministerial matter, Representative Newman, just for clarifying the record, can you move the House Labor and Commerce CS as our committee bill we're here with?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move committee substitute for House Bill number 22, Labor and Commerce, version 28, LSO 139/U for committee discussion.
Are there any objections? Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. That's the official bill we have before us. We'll, if there are any questions, we'll for you. We'll tell you whether we have some public testimony. We'll go to. Are there any questions for Ms. Latham? This looks like your first time here. Don't let her off. Representative Thompson.
I was just looking through the. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just looking through the legislative audit, and there was one recommendation. The board has successfully resolved many of the issues identified in the prior sunset audit, but current analysis of the Board of Marine Pilots' operative activities show administrative deficiencies regarding public meeting notifications, licensing documentations, and oversight of the Pilot Association's drug and alcohol programs. I was wondering what's been done, seeing how this was dated, well, it's just dated in November of 2012. But is that being addressed, or is there measures being taken to try to rectify these?
Mr. Haberger, why don't you grab a seat as well? I think you can probably aid Ms. Latham in this.
Sure. Representative Thompson, through the chair. When the audit was conducted in 2011, the Marine Pilot Coordinator that oversees those issues that you mentioned had been in his position for under a year, and he was unaware of the operational deficiencies that were noted. So since then, they are working on providing a desk manual and written procedure to codify primary functions that were needed, and the coordinator is developing the appropriate documentation and checklist to ensure that an adequate oversight process is in place. So you may be able to speak more eloquently.
What was the length of the previous audit extension? It seems like this was before us a year or two ago.
It's Marine Pilots.
Maybe we had some ancillary issues related to marine pilots that I'm confusing. You were on Labor and Commerce.
Representative Stoltz, I pulled up the previous fiscal note, and that was 2007, I believe. Well,
maybe it just seems like time's going fast here. But, Mr. Haberger, did you have any comments on the audit? Conclusions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thompson, that is correct. We had a new employee. We had an unfortunate departure without a lot of time with the previous Marine Pilot Coordinator. And so it left us somewhat in a bind where we had to go through recruitment. We kind of filled that gap with myself and some other senior executives. When the new person came on, as we were training, audit comes in and kind of notices a few of these things. There are appropriate comments. With those comments, we are putting in the administrative backstops, if you will, so that, for example, one of the issues was just getting public comment out on time. Making sure that we do that, making sure that it's amply noticed so anybody that wants to be at the board meeting is aware of it. So we're taking care of those administrative issues.
Are there any challenges? A lot of these folks work in some pretty remote regions around the coast areas. Are these meetings run at a time to, well, I guess, are there any challenges with getting everybody all together?
Mr. Chairman, the only challenge that I see, of course, is in the height of Alaska season, which is the summertime for the maritime professionals. and getting them together on issues that might crop up. For example, an investigative issue where we need their input. That is a bit of a challenge, but we normally take care of that through telecommunications.
I just have one more question before I yield to Representative Munoz, who's been patiently waiting. It's the issue of a lot of our new Arctic commerce and passage through there. Has that been a discussion point on this board's and this and the Marilla Marine pilots of the involvement of this professional organization as part of our entry into the Arctic waters?
Mr. Chairman, I know the board has discussed Arctic access, if you will. I don't know of any final conclusions on that I've seen from the board.
Perhaps some of the folks that are on there testifying might have some commentary. Representative Munoz.
Thank you.
Am I getting that right? I'm working on the
Munoz.
Munoz.
You got it.
Okay, I was watching a little Univision to try to figure that out.
Okay.
I mean, it sounds like you've been watching I Love Lucy. But
I don't know. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don,
Kathy?
on the budget, page 15, could you tell me what yacht fees are? I'm looking at the budget from FY 7 to 12, the breakdown of the revenues and expenditures.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, by statute, foreign pleasure craft that come into Alaska, if there are certain tonnage, or I think statute requires length overall, they are required to have a pilot. However, there's also an exemption in those statutes so that they can get a waiver. If they choose to get a waiver, there are certain fees that they pay the state to have that waiver because of the process we go through of granting that waiver, and those are the yacht fees.
Okay, if I may. So that is that for a vessel of a certain size? I mean, a smaller vessel, perhaps, or?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, you're testing me on my memory, but I believe 75 feet length overall to, I believe, 150, you can apply for an exemption if you are a foreign flagged pleasure craft within that size range.
Okay, and then if I may, then it looks like it's a biennial fee structure collected every 2 years.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, that is correct. All our professional licensing programs are biennial.
Okay, and what is the fee? What is the amount?
We have two categories. A pilot is $2,500, if I recall, and a ship agent also has to be registered, and they're $800.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm furiously going through the report. Can you tell me, do you know what percentage of Marine pilots are Alaskans and what percentage are not, roughly?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I can at this time. I'd have to check into that.
Thank you. And through the chair, one of the duties of the board is trainings and to oversee approved training programs for Marine pilots. Has the board ever considered doing anything in that area that might shift the balance towards more Alaskans in these jobs as opposed to people who come up outside of Alaska?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, I'm not aware of any overt action by the board to require Alaska Hire, for example.
Thank you. Through the chair.
Representative Guerra.
Alaska Hire would probably be illegal, so the only way you could really do it would be through the training function that you have. I guess I would just ask if those numbers are available, if you could let us know what the percentage is of Alaskans and non-Alaskans, and then whether or not you feel like your board can do anything in terms of training to shift the balance towards a higher pool of Alaska Marine pilots. They're high-paying jobs, they're good jobs, and they're jobs that I think we would like to see filled by more Alaskans.
And I think an ancillary question would be how many of them are Alaskans that have moved outside. That's another commerce point. I know a couple of them, I think, that have moved outside, and I don't even know near all of them, obviously. Well, maybe some of the folks testifying from the industry might have some commentary on that. No? Any other questions? Why don't you stay in place? I think everybody is testifying remotely. And start with online. We have from Dutch Harbor, David Arts. I believe you're a captain, Captain Arts. Well, wait a minute. They probably had us muted.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, and to the committee. Captain David Arst, Alaska Marine Pilots.
You sound like an airline pilot or one of those train guys. And you'll have to get closer to your microphone.
I have the receiver to my mouth, sir.
Right. Okay, Captain Arts, please identify yourself and provide your testimony on House Bill 22.
Captain David Arst, member of Region 3, Alaska Marine Pilots, based in Dutch Harbor. We service Western Alaska, the Alaska Peninsula, out through the Aleutian Island chain, Bristol Bay, up through the west side of the state, and then across the northern boundaries to the Canadian border. I don't have any direct testimony to give, sir. I'm just monitoring, listening into House Bill 22. If there's any questions that you think I might be able to answer, I'd certainly be.
Thank you, Captain Arts. I had asked a previous question, probably to the wrong person, about the issue of our entry into the Arctic maritime environments and what role the Marine pilots would play on the safety issues. And is that going to be something that the federal government's going to require us? Is this even a debatable issue, having Marine pilots heading and flying the Arctic waters?
In answer to your question, Mr. Chair, currently the statute and the regulations require state-licensed pilots on board specific vessels that are within the boundaries of the state of Alaska. That typically goes 3 miles from the coastline. It does go out farther in some instances across bays and in certain points along the coast. And beyond that 3 miles are federal waters that is managed and overseen by U.S. Coast Guard. So to answer your question, currently any activity that is within the boundaries of state waters can fall under the current regulations, and pilots would be on those vessels.
Representative Edgman.
Yeah, just to add to those comments, the Northern Waters Task Force, which provided its report to the legislature last January, I think it was, maybe it was February, actually had this discussion, I think, at a couple of times, but we ultimately, in the end, did not include a specific reference to Marine pilots in our final report. But I think there were members who were supportive of the question you asked in terms of the Marine pilots' involvement in areas like the Arctic. So it was an item of discussion from the task force.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Arts? Thank you very much, sir, for your being part of today's hearing.
You're welcome.
We have Linda Day from Legislative Audit. She says she's here for questions, so if people have any questions about the audit, she must be the person that performed the audit. If there are any questions, maybe as we're closing, we may come back to her. We certainly don't have to if there's not a member desire. We have, see if I know, Paul Fuse, Southwest Alaska Pilot Association.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just say that for SWAPA, I support the bill as it's written, and I'm mainly online just to answer any technical questions if necessary. Thank you.
Anybody have any tough technical questions for Mr. Fuse? Anything? Any questions about Fairview? What do you think about the Carlick Manor? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Fuse. Last, we have also from the Southeast, a different group, Southeast Alaska Pilots Association, Captain Douglas Sturm. He looks like he's here for questions. Did you wish to make any comments, sir?
No, sir.
Okay. If there are any questions about the Southeast Pilots, he is here in the room. Or is there anybody else? I don't see anybody else that is signed up or online. Is there anybody here in the room in Juneau? Is there anybody online? Any of the remote communities? Anybody on a ship? Flying the water safely, I hope. We'll go ahead and close public testimony. Are there any amendments? Representative Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to point out on page 2 of the fiscal note analysis that the first line should read that the board extension is through June 30th, 2019, not 2018. This bill has one fiscal note. It's a committee substitute for House Bill 22, Labor and Commerce. The fiscal note dated January 30th, 2013. From the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. The fiscal note indicates that there will be receipt services from in fiscal year 2014 through fiscal year 2019 for each year in the amount of $151,200 and one full-time position.
Any questions on the fiscal note? Go 3 for 3, Representative Newman. Want to give it a shot?
We'll try. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move committee substitute for House Bill number 22, Labor and Commerce, version 28-LSO139/U from committee with any fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, House Bill 22 is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. Thank you for your presentation, Ms. Latham.
Thank you very much, Chairman Stoltz, members of the committee.
Is there anything else to come before the committee? Representative Newman, I don't have it on here. Do we have a committee meeting in the morning tomorrow?
Yes, we do.
Okay. It wasn't listed on here, but members know the drill, 8:30 tomorrow, Health and Social Services Budget Subcommittee of the Whole.
This is Senior Disabilities, I think, Mr. Chair.
Senior Disabilities, yep. And with that, we had bills previously heard or scheduled. I think at this point, we won't have an afternoon meeting because of the efficiency of the membership here. So we will stand adjourned if there's no other business before us.